Hello, it's Philip, and welcome to the Bear Den, where we discuss wildlife and the individuals and organisations making a difference for them. We've talked around them already, but now, in this episode, we are focusing on the bear, known as the most bipedal of all bears, the Asiatic black bear, also known as the moon bear, a bear of many names. Sarah Van Herpt, the Director of Veterinary and Behavioural Husbandry Services Department for Animals Asia Vietnam, is joining us to talk all about moon bears, with a sprinkling of sun bears, as we never miss an opportunity to hear about them as well. You'll be hearing all about Animal Asia's mission of kindness in action. There are lots of moving stories of individuals rescued from the cruel bear bile industry. We cover innovations the team in Vietnam has introduced over the years to help rescued bears with their rehabilitation, such as cooperative care and physiotherapy programs that treat the bears with care and respect. And we hear about exciting developments happening this year. All this plus ethical tourism and the price of limes. So I won't delay us any further. Let's get to it. There is a place in the remote northwoods of Minnesota, North America. It's located near the town of Orr, population approximately 300. Outside of this town is an area where normal rules are put to one side. It's a place where humans and wildlife meet. It's a special place, wholly unique, and not without its controversies. This is the Vinschuti Wildlife Sanctuary, run by the American Bear Association, ABA for short. The ABA is dedicated to promoting a better understanding of black bears and all wildlife through education, observation, and experience. I'm your host, Philip Stubley, and welcome to the Bear Den. Hello, Sarah. Welcome. Thank you for joining me in the Bear Den. We've had a couple of Australians on, but you're our first Kiwi. So yeah, would you, first of all, could you introduce yourself and just tell us where you're speaking to us from?
Yeah, so my name's Sarah Van Herpt, and I currently, today, am in our Tam Dao Bear Rescue Centre in Vietnam. So that centre is about 1 hour north of Hanoi.
So yeah, so what's your background? How did you end up working where you are?
Yeah, I think I got really lucky, honestly. So I've got a Bachelor of Science in Ecology and Zoology and a Master's in Conservation Biology. And somehow I ended up working as a zookeeper in New Zealand, which I think I got really lucky because that industry is just so competitive. So I was working in Wellington Zoo, and while I was doing that, I was really interested in vet nursing. So I thought, I'll study that because I could distance study. So I got my vet nursing certificate as well and did a few years vet nursing in the wildlife hospital at Wellington Zoo. And then I sort of had reached about 7.5 years there and sort of got that itch of wanting to get out and explore and see what else is out there. And so I applied for a job with Animals Asia, and then I got it. So I started in Vietnam as a bear team manager and then sort of worked my way up to senior bear team manager. And now I am a director of our veterinary, the director of our veterinary and behavioural husbandry department. So my team takes care of or is responsible for animal care across all of Animals Asia programs in Vietnam. So bears, elephants and government rescue centres support.
Oh, amazing. And so how long have you actually been based there then?
I've been in Vietnam for just over 9 years.
Oh, wow. Was
yeah.
it, that's amazing. Was that a bit of an adjustment from sort of living in New Zealand to Vietnam then? I guess.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was quite a shock at first, just how busy everything is and crazy and lights and noise and everything. But the people here are so friendly. Everyone's really kind and really helpful. And got to say, the cost of living in Vietnam compared to New Zealand is just next level great. So, home is New Zealand and Vietnam, I have to say. So whenever I'm in Vietnam, when I'm talking about home, I'm talking about New Zealand. But whenever I'm in New Zealand and I'm talking about home, I'm talking about Vietnam. So sort of they're both a big piece of my heart each.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, cost of living. I remember when this is going back about 10 years. I visited New Zealand, and I remember the cost of avocados was just astronomical. It was.
I took a photo for the team once because limes here are like they're almost free. It's ridiculous. And in New Zealand, the cost of a lion, it was $32 per kg, and that was a few years ago.
Oh,
So
wow.
they were like, "Excuse me?" I said, "Yes." Like, obviously, lions are hard to grow in New Zealand, but the difference is next level.
Oh, it's a good job I don't like limes then, so. Because speaking of food, I'm sure that are you a fan of Asian food?
Yeah,
Yep.
I am.
Banh mi's and fuzz. Fuzz.
Yeah,
Oh, good.
pho's a good one. There's another really good one, a crispy pancake called bun xiao. That's
Ooh.
my favorite.
That sounds delightful. Do love Asian food. So obviously, Animals Asia do have like several facilities and around several countries, but today we are focusing on the Vietnam facility. And so I guess briefly we'll just ask about like what's Animals Asia's story there?
Yeah, so Animals Asia in Vietnam, we're working on three big, well, four main projects. So obviously ending bear bar farming is our flagship project, and I have to say I'm really proud to be a part of it. It's something that's going incredibly well. There's just over 150 bears left on farms now, and we're working really hard with the Vietnamese government and authorities to get those bears out and rescued. So we have two bear sanctuaries. So the one that I'm at just north of Hanoi, and our new one is in Bac Ma National Park, which is in sort of central Vietnam between Hue and Da Nang. And so there's fewer bears there because it's brand new. But our plan is that, all rescues from now go to the brand new sanctuary, and we fill that and have two sanctuaries full of happy bears. As well as that, the other projects that my team helps to work on, one is there's one to end elephant riding. So obviously that team has got a whole lot of amazing people working on sort of relationships and legalities and all of that sort of stuff. And we help out by provide advice and care for the rescued elephants who are at a couple of different locations. So we have three locations where we work with elephants in Dak Lak province in Vietnam. And then we're aiming to improve captive animal welfare just in general. So we also work with government rescue centres, providing support, education, funding, equipment to them. So again, that's where my team helps out with this sort of education and teaching and that sort of side of things. And then the last project that we're doing in Vietnam is to end the dog meat trade. So that one is a lot of sort of investigative work, a lot of building sort of knowledge and awareness. We have a lot of focus on rabies vaccinations and education around rabies, because that's one of the really big side effects of the ending of the dog meat trade, is that dogs are captured or bred or from different areas in Vietnam and then transported up north, where the sort of key dog meat eating areas are. And that's one of the vectors that spreads rabies across Vietnam. Yeah, I think it's still quite open in Vietnam because it's not illegal. So the restaurants quite openly say dog meat restaurant in
Yeah.
Vietnamese. Yeah.
All right. I guess some people, if they're brought up a certain way, they don't see a problem with it, right? So.
Yeah, the belief is that eating dog meat, especially in winter, helps to warm the blood and keep you healthy.
And I'm guessing there's no science to back that.
No.
No. Oh, well, that's some great work you're doing there. It's all very vibrant and exciting. And then there's a lot of success, obviously. I know that Ricky Gervais regularly pops up in my YouTube ads telling me that Animals Asia is on the verge of ending bear bile farming in Vietnam forever. It's like I've got it
Yeah, he's amazing.
memorized. Yeah.
Yeah, we're lucky to have some very amazing supporters and donors, and yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, just for people that might not be as aware of the bear bile industry, for some context, can you just kind of tell us what it is and how it affects the bears and what you're doing to tackle this quite cruel
Yeah, of
industry?
course. In Vietnam, the industry focuses on Asiatic black bears or moon bears, and basically they're kept in small cages, dark, damp, usually out the back somewhere, and bile is harvested from their gallbladder. So bile contains a chemical called ursodeoxycholic acid. Excuse me, it's a very long word. That does actually have medicinal properties, and it is used to treat liver disease and things in human patients. However, there are synthetic and herbal alternatives available that contain that exact same chemical. So there's no need to be using it from their gallbladders, but that's sort of how it actually came about in traditional medicine. So in Vietnam, the way the bile is extracted is the bears are basically roped down and held down and anesthetized, and then they use an ultrasound guided sort of needle method. The bears are often starved before extraction because that creates more bile. And then they're not really given access to much water or food in general anyway. Basically, we've kind of gone for a multi-pronged approach because, this is people's traditional belief and there's science behind it. Even though the science behind bear bile farming demonstrates that bear bile often contains pus, cancer cells, red blood cells, infection, and can actually make people really sick. It is a traditional medicine that, would have been effective. So, in order to change the industry, we really approach it with understanding, compassion, and empathy, and provide alternatives. So, one of the really important things that we do is we've worked with the traditional medicine community in Vietnam, and they've agreed and no longer prescribe bear bile. And then, taking that further, we have published books in Vietnamese about what the herbal alternatives are. If people don't want to take synthetic medicine, here's herbal alternatives. We've also worked with traditional medicine practitioners and Cocoon, who is a beauty company in Vietnam, to create herbal alternatives to bear bile. So, like, bear bile is used a lot in Vietnam on skin conditions and bruises and things. And so, we've created herbal alternatives to that as well. Our education team goes out into schools, especially focused around bear bile farming hotspots, and sort of educates the children, and they build herbal alternative gardens in the schools and help them look after them, with the hopes that the next generation is going to go home and be like, hey, granddad, like, I think this isn't right. Let's kind of make some change. And then also we have a really good relationship with the Vietnamese government, and we signed an MOU with them in 2017 to sort of be their official partners of ending bear bile farming in Vietnam. So we work with them a lot on the sort of legal aspects, because basically what happened is in 2005, it was illegal to take bile from bears, but they couldn't take the bears away from the farmers because they didn't have anywhere to put them. So they made it illegal. They made it so that from 2005, every bear on a farm was microchipped, and those were the only bears allowed to be held on private residences. So you could still have a bear as a pet, but you couldn't take bile from it. That's sort of where we came in, and we started building sanctuaries. So we've built two sanctuaries. Free the Bears has one in Vietnam, and Four Paws has one in Vietnam as well. And so that gave the government spaces to now start taking the bears. So it started a lot with illegal confiscations. So people who were caught taking bile or with bile products, or with bears who weren't microchipped, those bears could be confiscated. And then through all the education and all of the work with the communities and things, that's when we start to see more and more voluntary handovers of bears. And one story I'll always remember really vividly is our former country director, Tuan Binh Dixon. He and I were on my first rescue together down in Binh Duong, which is near Ho Chi Minh City. and there was these six bears, and I watched one of them, her name's Dawny Grace. Just we wheeled in a cage for conscious transport, and she just shot to the top, and I was like, Twan, what happened? She said, and he said, this is what she associates this cage with extraction. So that she's said he's seen this a lot in these bears, and he said, but what's really kind of special about this farm is that earlier, quite a few years, they'd rescued I think 13 or 14 bears from that farm, and at that stage they had still 30 bears remaining. And Tuan had said to the farmer at the time, you're doing the right thing, and one day you're going to look back and you're going to realize that it was the right thing, and you're going to kind of regret this period. And then eventually the farmer kind of came back to Tuan, and he's like, you're right, like I see it now, please take the rest of my bears and close down my farm. So really, over the time we've worked in Vietnam, you do really see a lot of attitudes changing, and a lot of people, you know, they're realizing that the industry is on its way out. There's not as much demand for bile anymore. There's a lot more education around welfare and things in Vietnam as well now. So together, it kind of all helps.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, no, welfare especially. I feel like it's much more on the conversation these days than it used to be. And it's not just good enough to like, oh well, I provide shelter and food for it. It's fine. It's like, no, there's much more to it than that.
Yeah.
And then also, I like how you're saying you've got to look after the people if you want to look after the animals as well, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's another really sweet story that always gets to me, and that's of QQ. So we rescued her a few years ago now, and I say rescue, but actually, so what happened is one of our Hanoi office staff, her friend, had a father who had a bear, and so you know they sort of made a connection. And her father came out to visit our sanctuary and like learn about what we did out there and what we could offer his bear. And it's the first bear since I arrived anyway that arrived with their own name already. And so we call her QQ, but when he said it sounded like he was saying cute, cute. That's very
Oh,
cute. Very
yeah.
sweet. And so he came and he toured our sanctuary, and he saw all the happy bears, and he saw, you know, all the things we could offer her. And he was, you know, kind of blown away. His only concern was we had so many bears. Would we have enough food for her? So we took him to the nutrition area and showed him all of the so much fruit and veg and everything that she could ever want. And he relinquished her to us. And he's actually visited twice since she came, and sort of both times she's been really happy to see him, she's recognized him, but she's also just kind of doing her own thing, and it's been really nice. And you know, she's had some challenges since she's been here. We've moved her from one group to another group because she was having issues in the first one, but she found a best friend, and so we moved the two of them together. She had to have her eye removed because of a recurring sort of eye issue. Sorry, I'm not a vet. And we just, you know, explained those things to him, and he just was like, thank you so much for taking such good care of her. Like, he wasn't mad, he wasn't upset, he just could see the level of care and love that went into everything we did for her, and he was really appreciative. We have had the same thing with some of our Bac Ma bears. It's a bit different, they haven't been to visit, but last year we rescued a bear from Haiphong, and the owner was a little bit nervous. But you know, we just spoke with them and reassured them, and we were very respectful. We, you know, kept our staffing to a minimum. We didn't make a big fuss or anything like that. And someone else who owned a bear saw how respectful we were and how smooth it was, and called us up and said, I saw that, and I want you to take my bear now. So really, being respectful, being empathetic, and being understanding is just really the core of our work, and it helps. I think that's something really special about Animals Asia.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I just like how it's such a, it's such positivity or that you're putting out around it, There's no sort of judgment, blame or anything. It's got to move past
Yeah.
that. It's, you know.
I find it hard to read the comments sometimes on social media and things, and hear people, saying how bad these people are. And I just want everyone to know that they're not bad people. That, like, of course there's bad people out there, but the majority of these people who have these bears, they're not bad people. They don't know any better, and they love them. They love them so much. One of our recent rescues to Tam Dao, not recent anymore, but her owner came with her and was crying, knew it was the best thing to do, but just loved that bear so much. So yeah, I think we just, as a world, we just need to try to be more kinder and understanding of what's going on.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, I mean, you've talked about several rescue bears. How many actual bears do you actually have? You've got the two sites, I guess they're spread between them, but like how many have you actually got?
Sorry, 6, 10, 14 in Bäckmar, and they're all moon bears. And I think at last count, 167 in Tam Dao. And in Tam Dao, we have 12 Malayan sun bears, and everyone else is a moon bear.
Wow.
But I like to say that those 12 sun bears cause as much damage as those 150 odd moon bears.
Yeah, I bet. So yeah, actually speaking of, there's moon bears, AKA Asiatic black bears, which I guess we'll get into. Sun bears, I mean, they're very active, got a lot of nervous energy. I'm just kind of thinking, are moon bears, like, are they quite similar, temperament-wise, or like quite different?
Not at all. So when I think about sun bears, my take on them is that they're a very, very, very intelligent, very emotional species of bear, and they kind of like live on the outside of their skin. They're very, emotional is a good word. We're kind of
Yeah, it's a
maybe
good
they're
way.
like the border collies of the dog world, whereas moon bears are the Labradors. They're sweet and they're a bit goofy and they're much more slower paced. They are also equally as smart, but some of them just don't show it very well.
They're not good with their PR.
Yes. They're just gorgeous. They're much more relaxed than sun bears. Very, very different temperaments I have found. But as a person who's worked with them in a sanctuary setting and received them from, really not ideal backgrounds, I don't know if that's true of all of the species, but in my
Well,
experience.
yeah, probably it's close enough. I mean, like you say, they're all individuals, so but so I mean, one of the things I always notice, especially comparing with sun bears, moon bears, like their ears just look so much bigger.
So much bigger.
They're so
Yes.
big.
So for, I guess, any of your audience who hasn't really seen a sun bear or a moon bears are named for the crescent on their chest. So they're Asiatic black bears, but that's a really long word, so I'm just going to say moon bear because it's easier. So they have this beautiful, individualized, light yellow crescent on their chest. So that's where they got their name. And they are bigger than sun bears, so they are about, we say, about 140 to 160 for females, 160 to 180 for males.
Double the size of most sun bears then, basically.
They have a longer coat, shorter claws, not short claws, but definitely shorter than sun bears. Bigger ears, they're real fluffy. And they do show seasonal behavior, in terms of going into hyperphagia and dormancy and that sort of thing. So whereas sun bears are more, not really seasonal in that kind of sense. Their breeding season is only once per year, whereas sun bears will cycle throughout the year. Yeah, some of the differences.
Well, as I was gonna say as well, because with moon bears, obviously they're in Vietnam, but they are found in other climates, kind of like, you know, you find them in Russia and whatnot, and all
Yep.
around. So, but I'm guessing, I mean, they don't really go into hibernation properly in Vietnam, do they?
No, so I would say Vietnam is really at the southern end of their range and a lot warmer. We don't have them go fully into dormancy, but we do try to encourage that behavior if they want to. So the sort of cues that we use are the day length and temperature, which obviously we can't change. But we do mimic hyperphagia by increasing food amounts in autumn, adding mast species. So we use chestnuts, and then beginning a decrease sort of as we come into winter. So we do see seasonal weight trends still. And then in winter, those that want to go into dormancy will, keep them inside with lots and lots of bedding and, monitor their appetite and begin to sort of decrease their food if they look really sleepy and stuff. It's definitely not how you would manage dormancy in a traditional zoo environment where you can just kind of lock them away for however many months and, they kind of be fine because, one of the difficulties of running a rescue sanctuary is that in order to rescue enough, well, not enough bears, in order to rescue the bears, we need to keep them in large groups. And so, sometimes that sort of space or that environment of having more noise and more activity, it's not so conducive to a really proper dormancy. But we have had some bears that we felt really needed that proper, really shut down environment where, and we've created and found space for that where we've boarded up walls, we've boarded up any light, we've managed them in a lot more quiet, and it's been really good because it's helped to sort of reset those bears behaviorally. Yeah, which is actually something I learned at one of the bear care group conferences in
Oh,
Edinburgh,
whoop whoop.
from one of the talks there. Yeah.
Nice.
So there was yeah, it worked beautifully for her, but yeah, the bears, well, we're all off dormancy now. So we're in start of April. It's only started getting pretty warm in the last couple of weeks. So yeah.
And just to go back to the hyperphagia there. So, like on average, how many calories what is a Asiatic black bear eating during that time?
Oh gosh,
Is that a,
I
am I
don't
putting you on
know.
the spot? No, it's all right. No, I'm just
Yeah, put
thinking
me on
because
the
you've got American black bears and they've,
spot. Not,
20,000
yeah.
calories a day. So I'm just thinking, I'm like, can't be that much, but it's
No,
probably.
absolutely not. It's not, it's nowhere near. Yes, you're right. It's not near a proper hyperphagia amount. Because it would just be so expensive.
Well, I was about to say, what's the food bill for
yeah.
the moon bear?
It's a high and getting higher with this Iran war. So yeah, it's always a balance. It always has to be a balance, and it's so hard of what we'd like to do and being financially responsible with donor money in terms of making sure that we can keep everything running rather than just spending it all on food.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know
But yeah.
food takes up a good chunk of it, but
Gosh, yes. When we were ordering like 220 kg bags of dog kibble at a time, it gets pretty expensive.
oh yeah, it's always dog food as well. Well, we found, I mean, in, especially in like Indonesia, I found like tofu and tempeh. Bears will happily eat that if you give it to them. And I was like, well, and it gives them a bit of variety, so, and it helps sort of stretch the dog food out a little bit.
Yeah, we actually do use tofu for bears who need protein while also needing to lose weight. So the reason we use dog kibble is because in Asia, especially, I guess it's a low cost protein source that's palatable, that's easy to get, but it is high calorie. So one of the challenges of managing bears in large groups is that you need to ensure satiation. Right. So bears are, everyone's like, bears are solitary species. They don't live in groups. I mean, sure, but they do come together in groups when there's an area of plentiful resource. They also have a really wide array of social communication and social behaviors. So when we provide plentiful resources for our bears, they live very happily in these large groups. And actually, it is really beneficial for a lot of our bears to have other bears to learn from. Because of the backgrounds they're coming from, they don't always know how to be a bear. So sometimes having another bear to teach them is really helpful. And then a lot of them form really, really strong bonds, especially females, and especially during winter. It's really fascinating. And I don't know why. Sometimes I wonder if it's something to do with, not producing cubs. So having that companionship from a conspecific instead of a cub, I don't know. I have no idea. This is my guess. But I've gone really off topic.
No, it's fine. It's all interesting, but well, it made me think because I've seen it. Like, we've got three bears, three females that are just very, very close, and they've got each other. And it's so funny though because when we put the dog food out in like scatter feed it in the enclosure for them to eat. One of them, bless her, she's. I think I think she was quite undernourished as a young cub, and unfortunately, and so she gets very possessive, and you can't go near her. And obviously, you try to kind of make sure that she understands that there's plenty of food, and that she doesn't have to worry, and she doesn't have to resource guard. But unfortunately, it's quite ingrained. But that's the only time where she gets the other two though. The other two girls have sort of they're very chill. They just like almost look at her and go like, "Oh yeah, this is oh she's on one right now. We'll just leave her alone." It's like, and then they're fine. It's like the other two seem to understand completely.
Actually, you remind me of my point I was trying to get to when I went
Oh yeah.
off topic, which was because we have large groups and we provide plentiful resources, we have to be really careful about weight management. So our bears are definitely probably a higher weight than you would see in a zoo bear that is not housed in a large group. But if they are too high in weight, or if they have mobility issues that we're concerned about and we don't want excess weight on them, then we'll sub out the majority of their dog food for tofu instead. And that really helps with weight loss. And then we kind of try to ensure satiation through the veggies instead. So, yeah, if you visit one of our sanctuaries, and you see some fat bears, no judgment.
No, there's I'd just be happy being there probably, so don't worry.
Is bear heaven,
Yeah.
I think, anyway.
So just a little bit more on moon bears. I just wanted to ask, what are the sort of unique qualities of moon bears, or like what's your favorite thing about them?
Well, this is not my favorite thing about them. This is one thing that always worries me is that they're not very well studied as a bear species. There's not that much information out there, really. But I think some of the things that I like best from the bears that I've worked with are their resilience. What they've been through and what they come back to, like, is just amazing. So we have a female moon bear. Her name is Bun. It's after a princess story. Princess fairy tale in Vietnamese. It's very
All right.
sweet. She arrived and she was so aggressive. She was kind of scary. And she was so stereotypic that she would injure herself, and she had like bleeding wounds on her paws. So we had what we call a welfare support plan for her, which covers sort of, what we think might be happening and why, and tries to, brainstorm ideas to help and how we do that. So we use a combination of, behavioral and medical interventions. And so, we got her slowly to a point where she was much more happy with people. And then we did a health check after like a couple of years where she'd been with us, and found she had elevated, I think it was liver enzymes. And so we thought, okay, well, it would be really good to train her for blood draws so we could monitor it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And From the bear who was growling and swiping and charging at me when she arrived, to the bear who just was so chill, putting her hand onto the blood draw plate, like just letting me touch her and poke her with needles, whatever. She was it, like, it blows my mind. Like, her and another bear, Skye. Unfortunately, Skye's no longer with us, but when Skye arrived, we have a temporary area where we keep them initially. And we have a hook that we use to hook things out of their temporary cages. And she would steal this hook and bend it in half. And this is like a thick metal rod. And she was just like Hulk smash this thing. And so obviously, we work with her and we try to build rapport and earn her trust back to. By the time she is in the bear house and sort of established and happy, she waits at the front of the den with her mouth open for you to throw food into it. Yeah.
Oh,
I
so
think the resilience of them as a species is really cool. And
yeah.
also one thing I find about some of our bears is they're really into one of my favorite concepts, which is contra freeloading. So, for those of you who've never heard of contra freeloading, it's kind of the concept of when given the choice between having a resource just provided to you and having to work for it, an animal will choose to work for it, right? So, with some of our bears, there's an apple sitting right next to them, but here's this puzzle feeder or this other sort of more difficult apple right here, and they're going to this other apple. So, like, I have to be honest, and maybe it's volume. I don't see that as much as the sun bears as I do with the moon bears. I think the
Someone's a bit
sun bears
lazier, I think
super
you say.
smart, but they like the easy win first.
Yeah. So moon bears like a challenge more. Oh.
They like it, they like a good puzzle.
I suppose, yeah, my dad likes a puzzle. I'm not a fan, but it's like, there you go. What does that say about me? It's such a nice moment when you see like a bear, like you were just saying there, when they kind of realize they're in a safe space and they don't have to be defensive or aggressive, or like they realize that, oh, I'm okay now. Yeah, it's a magical moment. So are they known as being aggressive? Like, I guess are they like wild, their wild counterparts? Are they known as being aggressive towards humans, or is that, yeah.
So, there's a lot of issues in Japan at the moment. So they've had a lot of really successful work in growing their wild populations, but now their wild populations are getting so big that they're coming down into the sort of villages, and there's a lot of human attacks by Asiatic bugbears in Japan.
You've got me thinking as well, because obviously I know in Japan it's yeah, quite a bit of an issue. It's rural depopulation, I know, is one of the major factors, isn't it? Because a lot of the younger people are leaving villages and going to the cities, so then there's not as many people around, and so bears are starting to kind of come in because well, there's no one around.
Even we had earlier this year, actually a villager in the Da Nang province in central Vietnam was attacked by a moon bear. So that's the first time in my 9 years that I've heard of that happening in Vietnam. So they will attack if crossed.
Yeah, that's
So,
interesting.
and it's really funny because we look at these bears that we have, and in a very unserious, joking way, we're like, oh, okay, if we got stuck in an enclosure with Grace, we'd be fine because she's blind and pretty much deaf, so we could just kind of sneak around her. But if we got stuck in an enclosure with Sunny Ray, oh, game over, because he's cheeky. He will reach out and he'll try and play with padlocks. He's very smart, and he's like, I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him. So I definitely think there's individual differences as well. And I know, a lot of people think that moon bears look really sweet and cuddly, and they totally do. And there is definitely bears I would love to give a cuddle to, but I do not trust, I wouldn't trust them.
No,
Not at
there's
all.
only, I was gonna say, I mean, there's only I could count maybe a handful of bears I would trust enough to do something like that. And most of them were like, obviously, I sort of raised as cubs, so a bit of a different relationship to it. But yeah, we've all played that game, but like, right, if I was in an enclosure with this bear, what would happen?
And actually, like, it's we have a lot of safety protocols and we have a lot of drills, and sometimes it helps
Does
to
someone dress up in a bear suit?
no, but we do have CPR bear. He's Dr. Bear. He is human-sized bear, with a plastic, I'm not sure what it is inside, so that we can practice CPCR on a real bear. And he has been used in drills, and placed in various places so that our darting team can practice darting a bear who has escaped. So thanks, Dr. Bear, for taking that one for the team.
What a guy.
But yeah, it's part of our safety protocols as well. God forbid it ever happened, but we all knew stuff have to go through a training session of what to do if you've found yourself in the same space as a bear.
Well, I'm sure it's similar issues where, you have to make sure that you go around enclosures, and if especially after there's some heavy rain or wind, you need to check if any trees have kind of fallen down, and any sort of escape avenues. Yeah, that's I
One of our
mean.
more interesting stories was because we had a lot of drills about this because we had a parachutist land in the sanctuary next to a bear enclosure,
Oh, wow.
which firstly we didn't know parachutists were operating in the area, and then we were like, wait, what?
Did
So
they
we
know?
also
Did they know where they were when they landed?
I'm not sure that they did, but that's obviously all since been sorted out with the help of our national park. And it also got us thinking about another sort of safety innovation, which is safety cages. So we took some of our old quarantine cages and repurposed them as safety cages in bear enclosures. So if you're not near an escape point, there's a safety cage that you can go into and be safe if the
Well,
worst happens. So kind of pinched that idea from UK zoos, actually.
no, I don't know. If it's a good idea, it doesn't matter where it came from. Oh, nice. So I guess, yeah, in the sort of 9 years you've been there, I'm sure there's been quite a few innovations and procedures introduced. I guess we'll focus on the care of the bears. Like, what have you and your sort of team introduced for these, like, the bears that can't be released, obviously, so you need to have long term healthcare plans, and
So I think my favorite ones are our cooperative care program, our physiotherapy program, and our internship programs. So when I started 9 years ago, our cooperative care program was just our bear training program, and it was really reactive. So it was just training bears who wouldn't enter weigh cages or transport cages, or doing target training for maybe some bears who needed a bit of extra confidence building. And it was only specific people who could do it. So only bear team managers could train, and supervisors. So there was only five of us who could train. And three of those people were expats, and the other two were Vietnamese. And so then it's kind of like, why? Why? And so we started training our bear team leaders and our assistant bear team leaders. So we started with something that they had known and seen really. So we started with theory, and then we started them learning how to target train. And then once they had target trained, which taught them a lot about timing and what happens if your timing is off and that sort of thing, then they learned weighing, and then they learned how to load a bear for transportation. And that was going really well. So we're like, okay, what else can we introduce? So then we had a bear who had a broken jaw, and that had to have that wired. And so we're like, well, let's train her for open mouth. So we trained her for open mouth, and then we trained a whole bunch of other bears for open mouth. And now we've got, I think, about 81 bears who know the open mouth behavior. And each month they have monthly dental checks. So a vet or a vet nurse will go out to the house, look in their mouths, see if they can see anything that's wrong, and spot things that we otherwise had never been able to spot, like bears who might have had ulcers, or I think that's the main thing, broken teeth, or a bear's been slapped by another bear, and it bleeding from the mouth. Ask them to open their mouth. Oh yeah, no, it's just a little cut. They're fine. And so they were okay. And then COVID happened, and so then one of the vets came to me and she said, "I want to see if we can monitor blood pressure consciously in bears. Do you think we could train the bears?" And my Kiwi attitude was, "Yeah, let's give it a go. Why not try?" So we started a blood pressure training program where we published a paper earlier this year on it, actually. Some bears who didn't have hypertension and some bears who did, we trained all them up, and then we, during their health checks, they're under anesthesia, we did a whole lot of comparisons, and I don't know, it's like a whole big program, with the goal of that eventually we don't need to anesthetize to monitor if the hypertension medications are at the right dose. We can take the conscious blood pressure. And then the other vet came to me and she was like, "I think that it would be really helpful if we had a physiotherapy program for the bears because they have so many mobility issues." And so I was like, "Okay, sure, let's do it," as I seem to always do. And so we started a physiotherapy program. We found a specialist that we work with in Australia called Brooke Williams, who helped us set up the program. And we did a bunch of studies and made sure that what we were doing was effective. And then we rolled it out to like a whole bunch of bears across the sanctuary. And it's just continued to evolve and evolve more and more. And we've also working with Matthew Shackleton from the UK now, who's doing a lot of CPD with our team around physio as well. And then we've started actually elephant physiotherapy with some of our rescue elephants. So yeah, that program is really cool and quite large. Every single year, every single bear goes through a physiotherapy den. It's a den set up to see specific movements from the bears and score them so that year on year we can see how they're scoring, if there's any changes, any declines, also just sort of how they're moving. And then we have sort of that sort of monitoring
Oh, no, it's like I'm just
system.
imagining like a gauntlet pass
Kind
through.
of.
Oh, yeah.
There's tunnels. So one of the things that we need to see a lot is backwards walking. And so we designed a tunnel on wheels that we wheel in. They go into the tunnel and then they have to back out. There's resistance bands that they have to pull down on. There's hanging things where they have to show if they can stand bipedally unaided. There's things they have to reach into a tube to pull out. Yeah, there's all sorts.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah,
And
it
then,
sounds really cool.
the third thing's our internships. And it is animal related, but it's also people related because that's really important to me. We have Vietnamese veterinary and veterinary nurse interns. We're basically teaching bear vets and bear vet nurses and getting our sanctuaries into a position where vets have the technical skills to run the sanctuary themselves. So basically, essentially, we're aiming to train ourselves out of a job. So yeah, we've graduated 8 veterinary interns already, and our first veterinary nurse intern would be graduating in about 2 months' time. So it's pretty exciting.
Oh, that's great. And so, yeah, well, it's like it's getting local people to lead with international support,
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yep, exactly.
Which
I
way it
feel
should be.
as international, growing up in New Zealand, I was exposed to so many different opportunities that just don't exist here. Even the things that I could learn and study aren't the same here. And so veterinary school in New Zealand compared to veterinary school in Vietnam is very, very different what they come out having learned and being able to do. So really it's providing opportunities to the local people, and which is something that's really important to us. So it's not just to the bear farmers, but providing career opportunities and career development opportunities, not just to the vets, but also to our bear carers and abilities to move up and teaching them different skills and things. Yeah, it's really a really fun part of the job.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I really like that. Yeah, I think I'd love to hear about a couple of bears' journeys as well. I know you've already talked about a few individuals, but I guess if they've any other bears that you've kind of had a strong connection with, or individuals, bears that have come from the bile farms that, they can be psychologically, physically quite traumatized, and I guess it can be a long process because to kind of rehabilitate them. And especially because, bears work at their own pace, so you have to be quite patient sometimes. So, yeah, I just wondered how, it'd be really nice to hear some success stories there.
I think one of our most famous success stories from Vietnam is a bear called Dawn. I'm not sure if you've ever heard of her. That we had a
I know.
lot of public
She's.
interest in her.
She was, I think I've seen her name splashed on the website. So, yeah.
Dawn came in with basically learned helplessness. So learned helplessness is basically a condition where an animal's been exposed to something so terrible for so long, and they've tried everything they can to get away from it, that they just completely shut down. And so what we would see in Dawn is that she would be in her quarantine cage, and we figured out her triggers were anything metallic sounding. So gates opening, slides moving, doors opening, the cleaning hook, that sort of thing. And what she would do is she would curl into this tiny, tight ball with her back to you at the back of her cage and just tremble. Nothing you could do would get her out of it. Not one thing. And so she was probably one of the worst bears I've ever seen, like in terms of psychological trauma. She also, some of her friends who were in on that rescue, arrived at the same time of her, were also quite traumatized, not to that extent, but also we had welfare support plans for them. But she's the first bear that we almost immediately started behavioral medication with, because we could see how incredibly anxious she was and incredibly shut down and stressed. And we know that that affects the ability to learn. So, while with most bears, when they come in, we know that they're going to be going through a period of change and stress, and we generally just give them time to adapt, and they do so. We knew that this was so much more deep-seated that we should start medication as soon as we could. So we started that alongside a welfare support plan where we did a range of different things. So obviously, the first most important thing is building rapport with her and getting her to hand feed and associate us with good treats, which wasn't so difficult. Her trigger wasn't people. She was nervous with people, but that wasn't her trigger. And then moving on to doing things like when she was, we knew we were going to do an activity that would cause her stress, we would have someone who sat with her and just fed her, or we would leave background noise on, so it wasn't so quiet all the time, and there's something, always some sound, which helps kind of relieve the stress of those sudden noises.
Yeah, a bit like brown noise. That's what is it like?
And yeah, just a whole host of things. And it took a long, well, I say a long time, but really, for how bad she was, it was actually quite short. And so we did a lot of work with her, just really slow, small steps, getting her used to different things. And sort of we'd see the difference. So she'd go from curling into a ball to standing still with her back to you, to starting to head sway, to head swaying, but stopping to eat something every now and then, to then just focusing on you. And then that's sort of when we knew we could start doing more work with her, like getting her used to our transport and our weighing cages, because those are really important pieces of equipment for ongoing care. Eventually, She had her health checked. She needed to have her gallbladder removed. And then once she was ready, we moved her to a bear house. And we just thought, oh man, like when we moved her, she was very stressed, and sort of reverted back to that really intense head swaying that we'd seen with the inability to distract her. And I kind of sat with her into lunch. And she eventually left. But what it took was someone bought me some banana leaves, and we put the banana leaves on the floor because she didn't want to touch the concrete because concrete's weird. So, after that, we were like, oh gosh, it was really hard to get her to move across the dens for cleaning. And so, we just weren't sure how things were going to go. But then we thought, okay, let's try an integration and see, how this will go. Really not expecting it to go well, honestly. Oh my gosh, she loved it. She was so playful and so happy, and we were so shocked and like really just like over the moon happy, kind of like heart exploding moments seeing her so happy. And then we were like, oh, this was amazing. Then we thought, okay, well, the next step of rehabilitation is we let them out into the enclosure. And so we thought, okay, what's not really feeling very confident about her going out. It's probably going to take us weeks, if not months. Nope. First day she was the first one out. We were like, what's happened? You're amazing.
I saw a true personality started coming through, or in a way.
And so then, yeah, we managed to wean her off the medications, and we had very sort of strict like criteria. So she had to be able to still be comfortable doing XYZ things for us to continue decreasing the dose. And she did. And it was amazing. So yeah, it was honestly, I just can't believe sometimes how she got over it. Like she was really, really special.
That's
She
amazing.
is. Sorry, she's still
Yeah,
alive.
oh good, oh good.
I
Well,
was like,
I mean, as well, I'm just thinking, I mean, obviously you won't know the backgrounds for the bears until you come into possession of them, but I guess like going out into that enclosure, so I guess it's quite a naturalistic enclosure, for foresty, like, earth floor. Like, I don't know how long it had been between life in a cage to, touching grass, so to speak.
And I think one of the common misconceptions is that the bears really love to go outside when we first let them, and that it's really exciting and they just sort of go straight out. And it's just not like that at all. So even though like we try to bring the outside to them, like we bring them like grass sods and things, so they start getting used to that. They've been confined for so long that to step out into the wide world where everything is so big and there's rain and there's wind and there's trees and there's grass, and it feels funny because their feet are still adjusting to life not on bars, and like it's actually a really hard and can be quite time consuming process. So another really big success story, and I know we're talking about moon bears, but this is a sun bear,
No,
sorry.
we love some bears here. Don't worry.
Her name is Cubby Leo, and she was very, very traumatized. And I didn't work a lot with her in the beginning, but it took her from rescue 1 year to be comfortable going outside.
Wow.
And now she's just the happiest little thing you'll ever see. She loves to lie. She's got this really weird pose where she just lies on her back, and she just holds her hind feet with her forelimbs and rests her chin on her chest. And it looks so uncomfortable, but that is her favorite position. And she won't come inside at nighttime sometimes because she doesn't want to.
Well,
She's so happy being
she's
outside,
where she
but
belongs.
took a year. So,
A year. Wow. And I was gonna say, I mean, I know it's I've had some bears, like you say, it takes a little while for them to get used to going outside, but a year is still quite long. It's a long time, I think.
really was.
Bless her. Yeah, you just mentioned about a bit about like misconceptions that people have. What are the other sort of common ones you find yourself addressing about either the facility or bears generally?
I think we've actually talked about most of the ones that I do find, which is about the social nature of the species, the fact that they must love going outside. I think one of the other ones that comes up a lot is if we ever post information about a bear in quarantine. So The bears we have come from obviously physically and mentally traumatic backgrounds, and they come from small cages. So when they come in, they actually come into another cage, our quarantine cage. It's a decent size. They can stand up, they can walk around, move around. We've even got some double cages that we use and stuff as well, but it's still a cage. And people are like, why did you rescue them if you're just going to put them in another cage? Well, it's actually part of the rehabilitation process because, firstly, we need to rebuild trust with them because often they need some sort of medication or treatment. And when they're in a larger space like a den, that's just too, like, it's too hard to do because they can move away too easily. So it doesn't have that same opportunity. And also, we don't have space to put new bears in dens because, you know, our sanctuary, at least in Tamdale, was so full. And even in Bacmar, like, it's a risk to the current population. So while they have to be in quarantine, they are in these cages. But what people don't realize is that, yes, they're still in a cage, but A, it's only for like 30 to 45 days, depending on quarantine length. And B, while they're in those cages, they're getting things that they never got for years and years. So they get 3 feeds a day, they get 3 or 4 enrichment sessions a day, they get browse, leaves, bedding, they get showers, they training, they get treats, they get like all of these different things that help them to start showing their natural behaviors. And then also, while they're doing that, they're rebuilding muscle. So there's not much point moving around in a cage when there's nothing to move for, which is what happens to them on the farms, and their muscles atrophy. And so if you put them into a space that's too big too quickly, then they can also injure themselves. So the other thing we do is when we're feeding them and when we're giving them enrichment, we're encouraging them to start moving around. So, you know, putting things on top of the cage and different spots around the cage so they're starting to actually move and use those muscles. So we had one bear rescue during my first year. Her name is Sooty, and in the truck on the way back in the farm, they didn't think she'd stood up in years. Months, if not years, because the layer of cobwebs above her was so thick. And she didn't stand up in the transport cage on the way back. And she only started to stand up to sort of move into her quarantine cage. But we still didn't know how good her legs were until we sort of started building them up. And we know she could stand bipedal. So we're like, good. Great, because you know we're not sure if this bear is paralyzed or what is going on with her legs, but yeah, so that's like another reason why. So that is sometimes hard for people to understand because they think we've rescued them just to put them in another cage, and it's like you do get that, but there's really purposeful reasons behind why we do that.
Yeah, and it's a process as well, isn't it? And they're in a much better situation there than they were prior as well. But and it's only going to get better is the whole yeah.
Exactly. And you know, it's temporary, and then they go into the den, and then, you know, depending on the situation, either they get their friends first or they go outside first. So, you know, the rehabilitation is a really complex, multi-stage process that we consider very carefully. So even when we're in quarantine, we have an enrichment calendar, but it's staged in 4 stages because we don't, well, these bears haven't had access to anything before. So we need to really slowly and carefully introduce things to them. So first, it's only natural materials. And then second stage, we might introduce some really basic, like a cardboard box that's open with some treats inside, or a new material, like a plastic pipe with something smeared on it. So new materials that they meet, we make sure they're not going to ingest them. And then we put things in the pipes, and you know, we move up stage by stage, because we don't want them to get frustrated if they haven't figured out how to use this thing yet. So yeah, everything we do is so very carefully thought out.
No, yeah. And it's also, I guess, the bear's kind of, like you say, it's got to rebuild its muscles. It's learning to move a lot more. It's, I guess, it's also restoring their confidence as well, because
Exactly.
they've had nothing, and going from, like, zero to 100, it's not the way to do it. It's got to be slowly, slowly.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Something else I kind of want to ask you about as well is, obviously, because caring for animals can be, quite an all-consuming thing. And I'm sure there's always some difficult decisions you have to make in some cases. I'm just kind of wondering as well how you and your team, how do you look after yourself? I'm just kind of thinking of things like combating things like kind of like burnout or emotional fatigue, because I imagine that can definitely be something that overhangs.
We're really lucky. Animals Asia provides us with an employee assistance program. So we have like counselors we can call completely anonymously, completely free, as long as we need them. So that's really helpful. And as managers, that's something that we always remind our teams about. We're also really proactive in trying to communicate information. So especially around euthanasia of like a chronic case, we have a process where we have like a quality of life form and assessment, and then that's got all the options we have left to try to improve their quality of life. And then once those are exhausted, we have an end of life assessment, and we set trigger points for euthanasia based as a team, so veterinary and behaviourally, like. So we can sort of like remove that emotion, and we're like, okay, well, they've hit these trigger points. It's time to say goodbye. So we try to be really proactive with the team and sharing that information, so it's not a surprise. It's not unexpected. Of course, obviously, there's always the unexpected ones, and that's really hard. We also, because we have such a geriatric population, who have like 70% of our bears have hypertension. Like, there's just so many conditions that these bears get because of biofarming. Each year, generally between January and April, we have our highest proportion of bear losses. And so, for example, this year, we lost three bears last week and one this week. And so that's really, really hard on the team. So proactively coming into that season where we've looked at the data, we look at the ages, we look at the causes, we look at when these things happen, and we know that there's that period that coincides with dormancy, interestingly, where we will likely experience a higher level of loss. We have a presentation that we give to staff to help prepare them, help them to realize that they are the good guys and that this is not their fault. This is the legacy of biofarming, making sure that they really understand why decisions are being made, if they're that sort of thing. And then we have the opportunity for everyone to come and say goodbye and to be there with the bears as they pass. We have a funeral service where we have one of our amazing supporters wrote a beautiful poem. Every bear has their own grave and plaque. They're seeing that we respect them as individuals and, not a commodity. And then just as managers, I think I personally I find our line managers in our Vietnam program to just be amazing at pastoral care of the staff, checking in, making sure they're okay, recognizing when they're not, giving them space to talk things through, just being there for everyone. Yeah, it's really nice. Really, really, really nice community we have.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, because I know it can be hard.
Then, because we are living in a national park, those of us who don't have families here, that you can go to, will often leave on the weekends and, go to Hanoi and have, separate friend groups and, be able to do activities and have access to different things, because it is quite hard living and working in that environment sometimes.
The situation now in Vietnam, you were saying, so there's still 150 bears on farms. They're not like, obviously, there's no bile being taken from them. It's just they need to still be placed. Now that, like, I guess you can sort of say the bear bile industry is being, managed and taken care of, what are the other sort of remaining threats to, like, bears?
Hunting is still definitely a threat. There's just not really safe forest spaces for them. So, like, even if we or Free the Bears or someone was to look at release, where would you do that? Because, there's still a lot of hunting that goes on. We consulted with a case of a bear caught in a snare that then did manage to get itself out, but it's still a danger. We're still getting cubs at times, not from Vietnam, because I don't think that there's definitely bear populations left in Vietnam, but they're very, very small. I think the majority of our cubs, based on the areas that we get them from, are coming over the border from China or Laos, being smuggled over the border. Hunting, poaching, still definitely a threat. Yeah.
And do you have like a release program, particularly in Vietnam, for bears?
No, it's something that is part of our project agreement with our national park in Bac Ma that we are looking into, and we're doing research into bear populations and feasibility studies and things like that. So, never say never, but it's not the focus right now because there's still those, the focus is still getting those bears who currently are legally held. So, that's still a lot of work to do. But yeah, in the future, we do have studies planned with some of our government partners, and let's see what happens there.
All right, so watch this space.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no promises, but let's see.
I also wanted to ask a bit about, I know you touched on it earlier with elephant riding, and it still surprises me sometimes when I've speak to, even the last couple of years, I'll speak to someone and they'll go, oh, I really want to visit Vietnam and ride an elephant. And I'd just be like, okay, here we go. I've got my little speech about why they shouldn't be doing that and like the horrors that elephants go through. I know that Animals Asia, there's like a ethical elephant tour that you can do where you can visit where is it? It's like a national park. You can go see
Yeah.
elephants safely and
So we actually have two. So we have one in Yop Don National Park. That's our main one, our first site. So basically you get taken out into the forest, meet up with the mahouts and the elephants who are just free roaming, and you basically just to get to watch an elephant be an elephant, which is, I think, just the most amazing thing. Because even though I think a lot of places end elephant riding and that's great, but then they go on to other elephant-based tourism like bathing or feeding, which again, that's not elephant-friendly tourism. That's not a normal thing for an elephant to be wanting to do. So yeah, we just take people in, we tell them about the elephants, we introduce them, they meet the mahouts, and they just get to spend time watching elephants do elephant things and whatever they want to do, really. One of my friends went on a tour and she was telling me about one of our females, and she just all of a sudden walked away. And so they were like, oh, gosh, where's she going? And they followed her, through the forest, and she ended up at the training wall. So we have some training walls built in the forest so that we can do things like foot care or, check their teeth and things like that when we need to. And she'd just gone to the training wall because she was ready for a training session. Thank you very much. So
Oh, yeah.
yes, we have Yop Don, and then we also have just opened one last year in Lac, which is about 100 kilometers away. And there's a lot of Vietnamese tourists that go to Lac for elephant riding. So now we've got two females there who were reunited, which is really nice, and they're doing the same thing there, where you just go and walk along following an elephant, doing whatever the elephant wants to do.
Oh, I love it. It's high on my list of things to do now.
Yeah.
So, well, I remember like one of my favorite memories of again, it was just in when we were in South Africa. I went to Kruger National Park, and you go on the safari, And you go to a watering hole, and there's just 40 elephants just hanging out. And there was the dominant male, and I think he had a bit of a pretender come along and start waving. There was a lot of trunk waving, and then the dominant male backed the other one into the water, and put him in his place, I guess. And then moved along. And I was just like, yeah, I just want to see be not bears, see elephants, like, living naturally, doing their things. These are behaviors you wouldn't see otherwise. I loved it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And
It's so cool. I get shivers every time I go.
yeah. Oh, just for anyone that wants to travel responsibly or ethically, are there kind of some top do's and don'ts that you could share with us?
For Vietnam,
Yeah.
don't go ride an elephant. Be my top one. Visit Yop Don National Park.
Good plug.
And go on an ethical elephant tourism tour. Civet coffee is very big. Kopi Luwak, it's also called
Yes, it's an
very cruel.
Indonesian
It,
one. Yeah,
yeah,
I've heard. Yeah.
it's also very big in Vietnam and also very, very cruel. Any place, and there's a lot of this in Vietnam where you can take a photo with a macaque or you've got a macaque dressed up or any sort of anything like that. Anything where you can pose with touch. Feed is not going to be ethical. The experiences you want are ones where you learn and you watch, and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. No tiger selfies, no swimming with dolphins. Not that we have dolphins in Vietnam, I don't think. But yeah, there's just all of those kind of things. There's not a lot of choice for the animals, and then a lot of time there's none because they're chained or, forced into it. But there's just so many beautiful places you can go in Vietnam and see wild animals. Songtrai Peninsula in Da Nang has red-shanked duck langurs, and it's incredible. It's beautiful, and it's really easy to get to. So, anything you have to sort of really pay to do something with an animal, it's not really going to be ethical. You can also, if you're in Vietnam, come and visit our bear sanctuary in Tam Đảo. We have open days twice a month where you can register on the website and you'll get a guided tour around and you get to see all our happy bears being happy bears. So check out the Animals Asia website if that sounds interesting to you.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. Is it just animalsasia.com or
.org.
.org? Yeah, of course. One of the things I wanted to ask is, like, what are your plans for the future, or what you're looking most forward to this year?
I think that this year is the year it's going to happen and we're going to end bear bile farming because the Vietnamese government is really committed to it. And that's what I'm most looking forward to. I mean, the end of an industry, reaching one of your founding goals, like chills. And you can say they've achieved that. Like that's just, yeah, that's what I'm the most looking forward to, is that ending of the bear bile farming.
Oh,
Yeah.
great. And I mean, yeah, it's a bit decades, literally decades long mission. And of course, I guess it's catching fire slightly, because I know it's been in the news recently with South Korea is putting an end to bear bile farming as well. So it's
They
hopefully.
yeah they they're doing great. They've basically banned it. They're just looking for places for the bears to go now. So I've been actually working with some international groups who are looking at taking some of the South Korea
Yeah.
bears and yeah.
You don't think Animals Asia Korea is on the horizon?
Well, let's fix Vietnam first.
Yeah, okay, fair play. One thing at a time. I also wanted, like, just what to hear what your thoughts, like, why are moon bears and why are sun bears important?
They're just a part of our ecosystem, and they play an important role in things like seed dispersal and sort of maintenance of, biodiversity and ecosystems in the forests. So getting them back into the forests is a really important thing that we can do. But just as individuals, they're sentient beings.
They have feelings, they have emotions, they have desires, they have dislikes, and every single one of them is intrinsically important for their own self. So, as a species, yes, of course they're important, but as individuals, no matter what they've been through, no matter if they are a grumpy bear or a happy bear, we owe it to them to give them the absolute best life that we can and recognize them as intrinsically valuable in their own self.
Yeah, every life has value, and I mean, like you say, they're valuable to themselves, they're valuable to other people, other animals. Yeah, and we've already talked about, so people can find out more and about Animals Asia work on animalsasia.org and offer support if they wish. And then, I guess, what's the sort of main message you'd like listeners to take away?
I think just remembering Animals Asia's, I guess, mission of ending animal cruelty, but through kindness and action. Just remember those three words, kindness and action, so that when you are looking at animals and you're looking at how to help them, the kindness doesn't just have to happen with animals, it needs to happen towards the people as well.
Thank you again, Sarah. I can't wait to see the end of bear bile farming as well, and look forward to seeing the last of the bears in Vietnam rehomed safely to live their best lives. Looking ahead, we're not quite done with Asiatic black bears yet, as next time I'm joined by Dr. Panjit Basumatri of Wildlife Trust India. The Wildlife Trust of India runs the Centre for Bear Rehabilitation and Conservation. This is the first specialised rehabilitation centre for Asiatic black bears in India. So, I'll see you then. The Bear Den, the American Bear Association podcast, was written and presented by me, Philip Stubley. The music was composed by React Music. Thank you to everyone who has helped make this podcast possible, including Karen Hauserman, Bill Lee, Clary Lee, Stephanie Horner, Donna Brazinka, Ross Coyer, and Angie Page. You can find out more about the American Bear Association at americanbear.org. You can find Vinshuti Wildlife Sanctuary on Facebook and Instagram. You can ask questions and submit comments about the podcast to pstubley@americanbear.org. The ABA is a special circumstance. We do not condone feeding wild animals. If you enjoy this podcast, help support the ABA either by donating, becoming an ABA member, symbolically adopting a bear, or come visit the sanctuary during the season and say hello. And if you do enjoy this, please do us a favour. It'll barely take you a minute. On whatever platform you're listening to this on, please either follow us or click the bell for updates and notifications. Please share with family and friends and rate the podcast, as it all helps us grow and is greatly appreciated.